JSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Hi, you're listening to Free City Radio. This is edition 325, and I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks for tuning in. On the broadcast this week, I'm going to be sharing a conversation with the co-founder of an organization working on the ground in Gaza, Palestine, which is called Reviving Gaza Mutual Aid. The co-founder is based in England and is named Ghassan Rabban. We spoke about the initiative and the critical importance that international solidarity projects that are collective are playing on the ground in Gaza, Palestine today. There was so many appeals online, and one particular dynamic was there was a lot of individualized appeals. Palestinians outside of Gaza with family connections and relationships in Gaza, including Ghassan, thought it was important to set up collective appeals because, of course, so many people on the ground in Gaza don't have access to social media or even the language to communicate their situations internationally. So these individualized appeals, of course, are meaningful, but they aren't able to reach many people who are being affected by the genocidal policies of the Israeli state in Gaza. So projects like Reviving Gaza Mutual Aid go further in reaching different socioeconomic classes and different regions of Gaza that maybe aren't as connected to the outside world. This project, Reviving Gaza Mutual Aid, has focused on food and water distribution. They have coordinated with other collective solidarity initiatives in Gaza, like the Samir Project. I got to know Ghassan in the context of a Gaza Mutual Aid benefit music album that I released in collaboration with Beacon Sound Label in the United States. So that's the context in which we had this conversation. And I really wanted to share the voice of Ghassan, who's set up this initiative on the ground in Gaza. He's from Gaza and lived there a good portion of his life, and he has a lot of family on the ground in Gaza. The project was supported by a benefit album called Gaza is the Moral Compass, which you can find through Beacon Sound. So that's the conversation this week on Free City Radio. Here is my exchange with Ghassan Rabban of Reviving Gaza Mutual Aid.
My name is Ghassan Rabban. I am a Palestinian from Gaza, and I'm based in Manchester. And I was doing legal work before, working in banking and stuff like this. And since the genocide started, I started working only with things to do with Palestine, and because it's affected me, it affected everyone in my family and all my community or all my people, especially my people in Gaza. When the genocide started in October 7, my family, my parents and siblings were in Gaza, and they spent the first 6 months of the genocide in Gaza, and they were displaced during those 6 months. They were displaced over six times. And the idea of Reviving Gaza came from, when they were displaced from a place to another place, they were like sometimes spending, they were staying in flats with other six families, for example, and those families were struggling. Lots of those families were struggling, and the idea came like from a conversation between me and my sister, and I was asking them about like the situation and stuff, and they told me like we are fine, although like also my family's situation wasn't like the best situation, but compared to other families around them, it was better because they have somebody to support them. And my sister told me there are lots of families who need support, who need help. Like, people are really struggling and we need to support them. And this is how we started with Reviving Gaza. It was just to support like a few families within a flat or within, within a block like of neighborhood. And things like, you know, developed really fast, and, you know, and we got lots of support. So we managed to support more and more people through Reviving Gaza. So yeah, as I said, like, this was the idea, just to help like a few families around them and the families who really need support. And then we got some support like from an organization. They told us like they have some food parcels and they wanted to distribute them. And we had like the people, we had the, like, my sister, my two brothers, and they had like some friends, and they started doing the distributions. And then, you know, it was just like, you know, it was very spontaneous, and, you know, it was just to start helping. And then when we got like lots of support, we thought like, you know, this is getting serious and we want like some structure. We want to have a team on the ground. You know, we wanted to have a team, you know, from outside, you know, to manage the finances, to manage everything and, you know, fundraising and stuff like this. And to have like, social media, to have a fundraiser page and this kind of stuff. And, you know, since then, you know, since the start of, you know, since when my family was in Gaza, we started and we didn't stop. We've been like doing lots of work. And our work was mainly focused on the most immediate need. So the first, like, we started with food parcels and stuff, and then the water was a big issue. You know, lots of people really struggled to find the water and get water, and we managed like to work with different destination plans. We have lots of contacts on the ground. We worked with them, we got the best prices from those desalination plants, and we started getting the water from the desalination plants and distribute it to the people, and especially, you know, camps where water was like a scarce, and you know, and lots of people didn't manage to get any water without our support, our help. And this is just an example. So it was, you know, focused on water, and then we had like, we started working with orphans, lots of orphans we supported, you know, through our initiative. When the starvation started, we focused mainly on food, and we were like trying like our best to get as much food as possible and distribute it to the people, you know, through our kitchen, or also like food parcels and stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to just pick up on the description that you're outlining, Hassan, about the process. Because I do think that even for a lot of people who maybe have joined some of the Palestine Solidarity Actions in different contexts around the world, there isn't this understanding of people in Gaza as having agency, as having capacity to actually work together to address a man-made catastrophe, a genocidal context created by the Israeli state. But what you described illustrates so clearly a capacity of organization, and it sort of embodies going beyond the simple victimhood framework. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
From my experience working on this project and you know, working on the ground and seeing our team and what they've done and all of this. I think when the times were really tough, when the starvation was really intense, the only people who were working on the ground is the Palestinians, who have like, who were like working with mutual aid and this kind of stuff. Like, who these people are the ones who were taking all the risks to try and support their community through the starvation, through the intense bombardment, and through everything. Bigger organizations were like really, they didn't have much to do through the situation, or they have some options, but they try to avoid the risks as much as possible. And they weren't allowed, like, and let's acknowledge also, like, the occupation didn't allow many of those organizations to operate on the ground. And this is where the agency of the Palestinians through mutual aid projects and this kind of organizing was really, really the, like, the only option. And people, we through our initiative, we lost one of the really core members of our team who were on the ground. She was leading the project in the north of Gaza, and she was like really brave woman who, like, she put all the energy and all the efforts to support this initiative and, you know, help, you know, people on the ground. And she was on the Al Baqa cafe. If you remember, there was like a specific attack on the Al Baqa cafe, and lots of people who were working in initiatives like this were killed in that cafe. And our friend Frances Salmi was there, and she was killed. We had another person who was like focused on distributing the water and this kind of stuff, and he was also killed while distributing water to people. So this is like the kind of like risks that the Palestinians were taking to try and support their community through initiatives like Reviving Gaza and other mutual aid projects. And, you know, the Palestinians are like really able like to do all of this, and they, and this is a proof, like, even during a genocide they were able to organize, they were able to support each other, they were able to do all of this hard work even in the worst of circumstances and worst of situations, and when the whole world turned you know, turned a blind eye to the situation.
What you described also about the ways that international institutions, like UN agencies, the fact that they were curtailed directly by the United States and the Israeli government, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, clearly had a deep relationship and, you know, an integrated process with communities. I mean, for generations, in terms of education and health clinics, and, you know, there's a context and reason why the Israeli state was working to dismantle that. But it's just really meaningful to hear what you're describing, in terms of people trying to build alternatives, even when these longstanding institutions are attacked. And maybe it's important for people to sort of understand that this is not, you know, that this is done in a context of necessity, not in opposition to these institutions. So I'd love to hear about that. And also just to think about the importance of trying for people to try to think about why supporting group projects and community projects like Reviving Gaza, Mutual Aid, and others is important. And I'm asking this particularly because I know some people hearing this will have seen these individual family appeals on social media from Gaza, which obviously there's nothing wrong to support a family, but that's different from supporting a group project that is trying to sort of share resources and through that build social cohesion, I would imagine. These are just some reflections. I would love to hear your thoughts about it.
Yeah. It's definitely going to your point, your first point. It's definitely like it wasn't an opposition to the bigger, like mutual aid in general. It was like started out of necessity, of course, out of like because of the genocide that's taken place, all the efforts that bigger organizations were taking were not enough at all. Like they didn't even address the bare minimum of needs of people on the ground. You know, people were literally starved to death, and we saw this on the every day. And you know, and this is why like the mutual aid projects they started and they started to develop. Like there is a lot of also lots of work that you know mutual aid can develop from their experience, you know, working during the genocide and, you know, thinking for the long term and, you know, and giving this agency for the Palestinians to work together and, you know, develop these organizing ways and work with their communities directly. Because also, I think one really important point that, you know, giving agency to the Palestinians to work with their community, it's like also they understand the needs the most, like people on the ground and Palestinians on the ground, they understand the needs the most. I'm Palestinian here, I'm sitting here even, and I need the team on the ground to give me like all the details and what's, you know, what's possible and what's not possible and how to tackle those challenges. And giving this agency to the Palestinians on the ground is really important in addressing all of these, you know, needs that the community is facing. And I guess also when you mentioned the individual, you know, or families support that through that people have been focused. I think people like to have like some kind of a relationship with the person or with the people who they are donating to. But I think mutual aid is focused mainly, and this is from my experience and working with mutual aid projects, it's we don't reach out to people who have connections with the outside world. There are lots of people who have connections with the outside world and they have ways of, you know, getting support. And there are lots of people who don't have this connection. They don't know how to use social media and, you know, they don't even, like, even if they in a really terrible situation, they don't go and ask for support. And this is where mutual aid come into place. And, you know, they go and see the people and, you know, try to find out their needs and stuff like this, and you know they support them. So connecting with one person, you are supporting one family. When you connect with one family, you are just supporting one family. When you are connecting with a mutual aid, you make sure that you are supporting, you know, a community. And this is what we want. We want to support the whole community. We don't want to be supporting, you know, only someone. And this is not just to, like, I'm not attacking anyone for doing this good thing. It's still like, you know, if this is the only way you feel like you can support and you just wanted to support this family, that's fine. But I think there's a bigger question here and why mutual aid should be supported more, and especially during these times. And let's also acknowledge that the genocide is not over. The ceasefire, you know, people thought like, you know, there is a ceasefire and stuff, but there is no ceasefire and the genocide isn't over yet. And the situation on the ground didn't change that much So there are lots of, like, we are talking about like all the whole of the universities, all schools, they have been destroyed. The infrastructure of Gaza has been destroyed. People still need drinkable, water, and we still need to go to those camps and distribute this water. So if this is the basic, like, really the very basic needs is still there, so this is like makes it more important to keep focused and keep supporting mutual aid and people who are working on the ground and doing all of this vital work.
We're speaking in winter 2026, just to sort of timestamp this for anybody who's either hearing or reading this conversation. What is clear is that no matter what time it is, for many years, the genocide and the effects will remain in families, in individuals, but also in the infrastructure, as you're describing, Hassan. Maybe just on a sort of like technical level, which I think could be interesting and meaningful for people to hear about. You talked about these initiatives to desalinate water and how obviously that's so important, especially with the Israeli state cutting off and controlling water flows, freshwater flows into Gaza. I know that you've particularly focused on this through Reviving Gaza Mutual Aid. So maybe just if you could share a few details of these sort of collective efforts to distribute desalinized water. And because I think there was a lot of news about these desalinization plants being attacked and bombed, which they were, but people also figured out ways to still access seawater, which I think is quite striking, obviously.
The first piece of information I want to share also, like, even before the genocide, 98% of Gaza's water was contaminated. And this is because of the occupation. It was terrible situation in water before, and it's still the same, and even worse. Like, they made it much worse during the genocide, but the occupation has been like really like attacking Palestinians with water as well. So the desalination plants, like, they were like the only option that's left, to get water, to get drinkable water. And let's imagine, like, we have, in one area we have like two or three desalination plants, okay? And we have like lots of different camps where people, like, because they left without homes, with nothing, and they were put in those camps, or like living in tents and stuff. So they wouldn't be able themselves to go to those desalination plants or buy water and get back to the home. So they needed this, like, very technical, like, they needed somebody to go find the water, go agree on prices with the desalination plant and get the water, and go to this camp and distribute the water, or to go to any area and distribute the water, because the water has been like cut off, like, from all people. And the only way was to distribute it through our initiative, is by going to destination plants, agree, the prices, and get the water and go and distribute it to in different camps. I think, like, the challenge was also, like, there is what is called the Makarot water, and during the genocide, the occupation, they cut off like this altogether. They stopped any water from like the this clean water, drinkable water, from coming into Gaza. And this is why like desalination plants were like the only option, and the prices of water went up massively. So no one is also like able to afford, you know, to buy this water. During times like because it was the genocide 2 years, it was like there was so many different challenges at different times. For example, in north of Gaza, they started targeting, especially like if you remember during the around August last year, August or July last year, up till the ceasefire around October, around this time, the occupation, they targeted all desalination plants in northern Gaza. And they wanted like to stop, like they literally targeted every desalination plant in northern Gaza. And there was like no way for people to get this clean water. Even for our initiative, we really struggled to find any water to get it and distribute it to the people in north of Gaza. And this was like the plan, it's part of the plan that, you know, that the occupation took to ethnically cleanse Palestinians from northern Gaza to the south of Gaza. And, you know, those challenges have been like all through, like throughout the genocide, but it was, you know, different obstacles and different challenges depending on the area, depending on, you know, whether we have like desalination plants in this area or not, and depending on whether we can reach to those areas or not with our trucks and stuff like that. But it was like depending on the time and the challenges on that around that time and all of that, and how the occupation was like work, like, you know, how the invasion was on the ground and this, all of that stuff.
Thanks for sharing all of this, Hassan. I think what I was hoping to have a sense of by talking to you was just sort of the magnitude, the major amount of effort that you and others were involved in doing the work of reviving Gaza Mutual Aid, and to get a little bit of a picture for people who are hearing this or reading this of the context. So thank you for taking the time to share this with us today.
Yeah, definitely.
That was a conversation with Palestinian organizer and a co-founder of Reviving Gaza Mutual Aid. Thank you so much to Hassan Aban for being on the program today. I spoke to Hassan in the context of a benefit album that has been released by Beacon Sound, which is a label in the United States. The album is called Gaza is the Moral Compass. It is the first in a series of 5 albums. The second one's also out. You can visit beaconsound.bandcamp.com for more information. I'm Stefan Christoff, and this has been another edition of Free City Radio. We broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Thursdays at 8 a.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. and Fridays at 1:30 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m. on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m. on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. and on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We're also a podcast. Look us up. Just search Free City Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Stefan Christoff, and this has been another edition of Free City Radio. Take care.